It's Thursday, November 22nd, 2012, and you're listening to episode 284 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
As of us sitting here, right now, it is about, I guess what, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock?
10.
On November 6th of 2012. That's when we're recording this. For anyone who follows the news or has a Facebook account or goes out in public, you're probably aware that as of right now, America's tabulating the votes from the election. And so we felt it was kind of important to do election coverage while we're doing this episode on the issues that really matter. By which, of course, what I mean we'll be doing here is we'll be providing play-by-play on the 2013 Ennies results. And what we're going to be doing intermixed with that is we're going to be reading through some of the game pitches that were sent in by you guys. We got more than we can possibly cover in the course of an episode, but we're going to try to hit at least maybe five or six or so of them. And incidentally, this does not necessarily mean they were our favorite ones. I just handed a stack to each host and told them to pick by whatever standards they want. So it could be random for all I know. But nonetheless, we're going to go through some of these and we will kind of discuss the pros and cons as we see it of each one. Now, of course, we're not your gaming group, so this may totally be the right thing for your gaming group. We're just giving our opinions on it.
The game pitches, you can tell Dan's taking it seriously. This is like cardstock he printed this crap on.
I don't print life-altering legal documents on paper this expensive.
I know, this is like one step down from what you put a wedding invitation on.
Well, it's funny because that's really all we had. It was actually that or sticker paper. So they'd be like printed on name badges.
That would be awesome!
Because for some reason we don't have any like printer paper, and I'm not really sure why. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and I'll read the first one here. This one comes from Frederick.
Do you have his last name?
No, I didn't put it down here.
He's like Swedish, and it's one of those that have like umlauts and little squigglies
the
over
little Pokemon-y
hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
Like, is this even, what is this?
What is this?
About to say, is this even English? Obviously, it is not, but
I don't have his last name. I tried to leave out last names and email addresses for the sake of people's anonymity.
Privacy,
anonymity. Okay, so here we go. I'm just going to read verbatim what they sent us. Okay, here's an idea I'll be pitching to my players. I'd love to hear you sell it. Actually, point is here, you're going to sell it. So let's see how you sell it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Real Earth, Renaissance era, Italy.
I love it.
In. Done.
Va bene.
Boom.
Andiamo.
The two Italian guys are in. Next. In fact, don't even bother with the next one. That one wins.
Yeah, I'm going to pause. I'm seriously going to pause right there. Are you guys joking or that's seriously right there?
No, that sold it for me.
Yeah, it did. I would actually play that game.
Why?
Because...
And I'm not disagreeing with you, but why?
Because not enough role-playing games, both published and ones I play in my life, take place in real life in an interesting historical time period.
I will agree with you on that. I think the Renaissance era in particular, if you take out punks... You know, the steampunks whatever, and the clockworks.
Oh, my God, Three Musketeer Punk.
That movie just came out not but a year or two ago. But, yeah, if you take out all of the punk genres, mm-hmm. the Renaissance really isn't covered much.
No, it isn't.
I mean,
it's very interesting.
If you get rid of the airships and clockwork robots, there's really not a whole lot done. All right, let's see.
I'm sold on it just because there's Italians.
All right.
There's always space Germans. There's always space Japanese. There's always demon medieval Chinese. There's always demon medieval French. There's never any fake gamer Italian sub-races or nations, and I yearn for that.
A good old-fashioned Medici sort of backstabbing plot.
Okay, so here's the rest of his pitch. I'm like on the second line here. Magic exists and...
Out. Done. Sorry.
Well, hang on.
I'm still in.
I'm still in because of where it goes from here.
Sure.
Magic exists, and so do real Earth folklore creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, Fae in the Imperial Courts passing off as humans, trolls under bridges collecting road tax for local nobles, goblins introducing firearms to the world with the goal of downplaying iron weapons in the battlefield.
So, this is urban fantasy that happens to be set in the Renaissance.
That's kind of what I'm getting. All right.
I'm down with that.
The players are running a struggling merchant house and trying to make it big. The problem is that unknown to them, the competing merchant family controlled by a dragon and the bank that they owe their money to is owned by yet another competing dragon. The players are stuck in the middle. Intrigue, swashbuckling, pirates, and lots of gold.
Oh my God, the Pope is a dragon.
Off you go.
Obviously.
He's suggesting GURPS.
Don't torpedo a beautiful thing.
All right, so let's
don't do the whole we get back to her place and she has a dong move with the sales pitch.
It's a good pitch. It's interesting. It's really cool. It falls into the category of not my thing. You had me at first because it was Earth and a real time period and a real place and real history and all that. And I'm really into that. And then they turned it into Shadowrun Renaissance. I'm just not into Shadowrun.
Well, let me ask you this question, because in past episodes, I've talked about how I see creative arts in three categories.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, and good, but not my thing.
It's good, but not my thing.
Okay.
I will totally say the pitch is good. It's well delivered. There's not a whole lot of wow stuff in there, but there's interesting things. There's very interesting things.
I'm certainly fascinated. I got to say, the things that I like about it, to me, this one's a winner, and here's why. I like the fact that it's set in Renaissance Italy. That's certainly a unique place to put it.
Yep.
It does go back to some urban fantasy, but that's not a deal killer for me.
No, not at all.
And I like the fact that he kind of stresses here that what he's trying to do is integrate not how we view fantasy in the modern sense, but to actually draw back to the folklore of the time.
Right.
But then bring it to the forefront. So instead of kind of a quiet conspiracy, it's more of an open secret.
Mm-hmm. See, I like the idea of it being urban fantasy, but it smacks of Shadowrun to me. And I guess people would say, well, Shadowrun is urban fantasy. And I don't know, to me, it's different because it's like I look at Dresden and I'm like, wow, that's really the epitome of urban fantasy there. And then I look at Shadowrun and I'm like, that's its own thing. That's its sort of near future cyberpunk magic thing. And that pitch, to me, it fell on the Shadowrun-y side and less on the Dresden-y side. I would kind of prefer it to fall more on the urban fantasy
side. You know, actually,
side.
How it struck me was more than Shadowrun. It actually struck me more like Harry Potter. John, what's your take on it?
I'm giving it good. I liked it more before we got to this sort of trope genre soup thing where all the various legends are all real and existing at the same time. I think that's about to get beaten to death in games and gaming fiction. But I like the setting. I like the idea. I would definitely play that game.
I have a book at home that is Myths and Legends of Italy. If I were running the game, I would start flipping through that.
Putting aside for a moment your opinion on it, how do you think it was as a pitch?
As a pitch? Oh, I think it was fine.
I certainly got a sense for what the world's like.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that it's undefined enough that I can kind of imprint my own ideas on it.
Yeah.
And Frederick may or may not decide to incorporate those ideas. But there's still a pretty clear sense of what the players are going to be doing.
Right.
It's not, here's a setting, blam. It's,
here's setting system. Why don't you want to play this?
Yeah.
You know, it's.
And he does introduce here kind of what your setup would be, that you're a merchant house apparently caught up in a whole lot of intrigue where it's not clear exactly what forces are against you or what they want.
I think I would have a couple of questions for him that would be easily answered. And then I would be thumbs up. It's like, okay, so merchant house, was that mean we're all playing bankers? And then the answer, of course, would be, oh, no. I mean, it's old school. It's Renaissance. It's, you know, you can be anything you want. Magic users, guards, soldiers, bankers, intellectuals, philosophers, artists, yada, 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 on and on and on. And yeah, I think it works as a bit. It gives you the system. It gives you the setting. It gives you a direction without telling you who and what you're playing and what you're doing.
See, but I think it does. I think there's a little bit too much structure in the pitch. We already have one, maybe two lingering plot reveals. We have roles and semi-defined goals for the PCs. I would rather back it off a bit and just tell them you're in a floundering merchant house, go, than tell them, by the way, your rival is a secret dragon and his bank is in the pocket of another secret dragon and they also hate you. I think that's TMI.
You know, that I will agree with you, John, now that I think about that, because I think I'd given it a pass because it's kind of like he's trying to let us in on what's going on. But if this is supposed to be structured as a pitch to a gaming group, I agree. I would simply say you're in a merchant house, there's a bank you owe money to, and then they've got a competitor bank and there's all this intrigue.
Yeah.
But I certainly would not have revealed, by the way, it's these two dueling dragons.
Whatever. The coffers are leaking like a sieve and none of you know why and you need to figure it out now is much more compelling than the banker's a secret dragon and he's taking your crap. Go.
Let's get an update here from Election Central. NES 2013 Best Adventure or Module?
Earthshaker.
No. Persecution on the Borderlands.
Persecution on the Borderlands.
No.
I would prefer Chris Mays's bag of on the Borderland myself.
I would prefer winged demons chasing you through hell.
On the Borderland.
Well,
on
John, I'll let you present the next one. Best aid or accessory?
Best aid or accessory? Lone wolf, battery-operated roleplay aid / massager.
On the Borderlands.
No, it's going well across the border.
To me,
it's going straight into the swamp.
That's a new punk to me. It's on the Borderlands.
Borderlands punk.
Yeah.
Anything on the Borderlands.
On the Borderlands.
I like it.
Vampire, yeah. The Borderlands.
You know, I know what the winning accessory, whatever this bull category you put up here was.
Yeah.
Dice. Just dice. Not chess X, not science X, just... The concept.
You know, it should be.
Dice.
It should be.
Dice win.
But the ancient Romans or whatever are not there to take credit for the first D20.
No.
All right, so Chad, best cover art.
Best cover art, George Takei. Just the man himself.
I can accept that.
Yeah.
Chad, you want to do a pitch?
Sure. I got a weird one here.
Okay.
No name, so I think all we got was a email address.
Let's go ahead and name him.
No, I mean, there's no name on
it. No, I know, but let's just go ahead and give the person a name. Well, you know.
Well, we had a Swedish guy, so we can't do like.
How about something nice and kind of German sounding? Like.
Born Jorgensen?
Sennheiser.
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 Well, that's the mic. You saw that mics we use. No, we need something.
His name was Kobayashi.
Why does he have to be a guy, too?
Maybe it's like.
Let's do a woman. Tallulah von Strattfalsen.
There's a Tallulah on our forums, though. So we need something more distinct than that.
More distinct than Tallulah von Strattfalsen.
There's lots of Tallulahs.
Be like fried green tomatoes. Tallulah.
You're pushing the envelope with the fried green tomatoes reference there. Brother.
I like fried green tomatoes. I think that's a good movie.
It may or may not be a good movie, but I don't think it made it out of the
cultural canon. I just saw World of Darkness
book. 1992.
How about Wadzia?
Wadzia. Okay.
Wadzia.
What is Wadzia's pitch?
A game of noblesse oblige, where your obligation is to reality itself. You take the roles of nobles with the authority to invade dangerous aspects of creation, sub-realities, that you can then absorb into your holdings to strengthen them, expand them, and perhaps eventually wage the ultimate war against the enemy, capital E, the nothing, capital N, that consumes reality by seeping into the cracks created by those that commit taboos, which should be defined by the table.
Very esoteric.
Yes.
All right, let me try and wrap my head around this. Let me tell you how it came across to me, because all we have to work with is the explanation that was given by Wadzia.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Let me try and explain what that sounds like to me. We are apparently noblemen of some kind of court. Now, it's unclear to me from that whether we're working together, it's a allegiance of convenience, or if we're against each other. But it sounds like because of this kind of force, this nothing that we're up against, it sounds like it's at least going to be sort of a treaty of convenience here, if nothing else. We are able to kind of reach into aspects of reality. Kind of what I hear from that is it could be like you can go to a plane of hope or something like that.
Right.
And you can eventually complete enough stuff there to sort of bring it in line with you. All the while, you kind of have this doom track of the nothing creeping upward, and you're trying to get enough things in place so that when that doom track hits the final point, you're able to resist it. I definitely have some questions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for starters, is my interpretation of the game correct? Exactly how do we do this? What are we?
Right.
What gives us this capacity to reach these other planes?
Obviously, you're not human beings that are going to Hoboken to strengthen the realm of Hoboken with Hobokenness. You're obviously some sort
of... I think that's a colorable interpretation of that pitch. I don't think you can rule the Hobokenness plot out from just that pitch alone.
Really?
Yeah. It's just so undefined.
To me, it sounds a lot like it has a Sandman sort of vibe to it.
Okay.
It has a sort of Nobilis vibe to it as well. Yeah. It's definitely different, esoteric, but it also taps on some standard tropes too. There's a great evil and you have powerful beings that are trying to amass power, but they amass power not through armies and stuff, but through concepts, and they are the sort of,
you know, for me though, I
avatar
don't
of the
think
concepts.
You're not wrong,
right?
I don't think that's a bad thing, because of the fact that while that certainly is an established trope, it's not one I've seen come up much in RPGs.
Well, yeah.
I see it a lot more in graphic novels or occasionally movies. I don't see it a lot in role-playing games. In role-playing games, the enemy is usually a lot more tangible.
Yeah.
It's a powerful wizard. It's an army. It's an alien race. The idea that you're dealing with concepts is...
Yeah. Even if it's a wizard with dragons and stuff, you can relate to it because you're a dude in a village, and that guy in the tower is an evil wizard, and he is doing something to screw up your life and the lives of people you care about in your village. So let's go kick in his door and then kick in his head. These are concepts we can understand.
Right.
Now, I am going to the plane of hope that's near Hoboken to not commit taboos that go against the concept, and then we made this whole hope thing up, to go against the concept of hope because there's this nebulous entity that in and of itself is...
And the taboos are undefined about the setting or the GM. You have to make them up yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And all this stuff, I'm not saying it's a bad pitch, and I'm not saying it's a bad system or a saying or whatever. It's very hard to relate to. You need a deeper understanding that goes beyond this pitch.
Well, let me ask you a question here, and we don't obviously have Wadzia here to ask, so let me just kind of give
this... Do you want me to pretend to be Wadzia? Because I'll totally go down the Hoboken line.
No. My question is, do you think, and obviously we're just having to guess by this email, do you think that's kind of the intention? Because Chad, for example, you in particular really like collaborative building. Mm-hmm. Is maybe the intention here only to kind of grease the wheels a little bit and then sort of see what the... I mean, maybe it's supposed to be a Rorschach test. Maybe it's supposed to be kind of, what do you see in this? What, you know, because it says, for example, the taboos are undefined. Well, if what's wrong is undefined, then by exclusion, what's right must also be undefined.
I could do this pitch, and I could do this pitch knowing exactly what I know about this game now, and what I would do it as, it would be a chancy pitch, chancy as far as it getting picked up by the group. You'd have to have a lot of creative people in your group, a lot of people who create writers and artists and that sort of thing. And I would pitch that, and then what would happen is what you and I and John just did, where you would say, the hope and the concepts and all that. And you'd start throwing this back at me. And then I would start feeding off of that.
Right.
I'd be like, yes. And it's like this concept of hope. And then you'd throw some back at me. And I'm like, yes, it's like this and this. And we'd keep expanding on it and expanding on it. And it would look like I have all of this information that I didn't have that you actually made up yourself.
I'm going to put this one down is, in my opinion, it's a good pitch. Mm-hmm. Depending on where the game master takes it from here. If the game master uses this just to get conversation started, and at that point we all kind of jump in, because my first question to game master, and this really isn't a question, but would be more like, okay, I kind of get you, go on. Mm-hmm. And I think what the game master did with it from there, in terms of either taking our input or whatnot, would for me make or break the game. Because if that alone is the sales pitch, I would say, I don't even understand what it is we're playing exactly.
Right.
But if the intention is to just kind of grease the wheels and see where it ends up, then I would actually say that's, I think, a pretty good start. And I have never played a game like that.
Yeah.
I've read graphic novels like it. I've seen movies like it. I have never played a role-playing game that's quite that abstract.
I'll bring in Nobilis for you. It isn't that, but it's a lot like that. It's a diceless system. And you play a concept and that sort of thing. It's very interesting. I think as far as a pitch goes, if that's all you have and your pitch relies on the people around you understanding what the hell you're talking about, the people really need to understand what you're talking about. If you have a group of role players that play D&D and they're kicking in doors and stomping on wizards' heads, I'm not saying that they're going to be against an idea or a concept or a pitch like this. It's just that they're not going to be prepared for it and they might not know how to react to it.
Yeah, and even if they play stuff that's a little more subtle than kick door, kill monster, get treasure, I've played political intrigue, etc. tabletop RPGs, and they're all significantly more well-defined than that, even from the elevator pitch.
So are you saying fail on this one?
Yes, I am going to break ranks and do what I'm probably not supposed to do and just outright say I do not like that pitch.
No, fair enough. You don't like it, you don't like it.
No, there's no right or wrong way to review these. And of course,
there's only the alienation of a fan.
Yeah, I only just pissed off a fan. Well, I'm sorry.
I look at it this way. I mean, look, we're not making absolute judgments. We can't make absolute.
What?
Well, no, that's what we're doing.
What show are you on?
That's what we're doing with the Ennies. Oh,
yeah.
We're not making absolute judgments of these because of the fact that, look, we're three people. We're not this guy's gaming. Well, I'm sorry, Wadzi. We're not Wadzi's gaming group.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we don't know where this person would go from there.
Yeah,
we don't know where the group would go from there. And so this may be a great pitch. You know, all we can do is give our opinions on it. But let's get back to America's Election Center here. Best Interior Art, Ennies 2013, Penthouse Magazine. John, Best Cartography. I'm actually going to take two out of order here.
Best Cartography, Keith Curtis for Blood Moon Goblins.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah.
Chad?
Yes.
Best Blog.
Best Blog, I would have to say probably Chocolate Oak Aged Yeti, which is excellent beer.
All right.
I mean blog.
Very good.
No, I mean beer.
John, go ahead and give us the next game pitch.
Okay. Hello. Longtime listener from Scotland. Love the podcast. Well, good day, longtime listener from Scotland. Why don't we throw another shrimp on the Barbie and read your essay?
Wow.
You don't have works to... when they're from Austria.
We've gone from Fear of the Planned Parenthood because that was an abortion.
You don't have to pitch this idea, but I think it's relevant. All right, let me stop there, Michael from Scotland. Don't pee on your own feet before you even pitch your idea.
Yeah.
Come out there swinging. It's a good idea. You don't have to qualify it with saying, well, this probably sucks. I pitched the next game I'll be running for my group with a mechanic. The mechanic is as follows. Quote, fantasy game in a Conan Lankmar style. Each gold coin spent foolishly on carousing becomes experience points. End quote. We're thinking of trying it in Pathfinder, but haven't decided on a ratio of gold to XP yet. Michael, I liked your pitch. I don't think there's enough blowing everything you make on ale and whores, especially in a population of adventurers with a high fatality rate. I don't know if you've ever gone partying with a current or former serviceman that comes from a combat MOS, infantry especially, but they spend every dime they're having one night on strippers, gambling, blow, and alcohol. And I think if we had an average party of four level one Pathfinder characters, they would be doing exactly the same thing, and they should be rewarded mechanically for their investment in their future. I know nothing about the setting other than it's going to be relatively low fantasy, but I'm okay with that.
He threw out Conan and Lankmar, so that tells me something.
Yeah, it's
I'm in.
Yeah,
I love
Lankmar. I'm not seeing
love it.
15 different levels of political machination or the nine lines of the Dragon Emperors and the fights of the seven provinces. I don't think you need that level of a world for this game. I think there's barbarians, there's wizards, there's thieves, and there's clerics, and then there's snake guys and orcs. That's the setting. I'm in for this game.
I have read all of the original Lankmar books, and I love the setting and the characters, so I'm in. I've even read the comic
book. I would want a little more. I would definitely say, okay.
If you're not familiar with the setting, you need more.
No, this is absolutely the starter spark when you turn the key the first. This is the battery revving up the current. This is not the engine.
I like the idea that he is encouraging a certain feel of kind of a rowdy sort of play. He invokes Conan. I've not read Lankmar, but I am familiar with Conan. Mm-hmm. And certainly there was a whole lot of debauchery and insanity that went on in that. And so I kind of have a feel for it, but I'd want to know, okay, so what exactly is this world like? What exactly are we doing? I get the feel you're going for with the game, but tell me about kind of the world we're in and how we fit into things. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think it is a great start. And I would definitely say, okay, I you got my attention. Give me just a little bit more on this.
See, I know, and I understand that. I mean, I know exactly what I would play. I know what race I would be, what I would be doing, how I'd be dressed, how I'd look, what I'd be. I got it, but I'm a fan.
Right.
You know, and well, so I get needing more. I totally get that. And you're absolutely right.
I don't have my race in my class, but I want to learn a little bit more about the setting and then pick my race in my class and then play this game.
Play a skull.
And then I'm level 9 and I'm wearing a non-masterwork chain shirt and I have a spear that I looted that I couldn't sell because I blew everything I owned on hookers.
That's a good hook. That is a good hook. The hookers and blow angle.
Let's get back to the Ennies. 2013, winner of Best Electronic Book, Dinosaur Noise. His pop-up book comes with one of those annoying watch batteries you have to go to Walgreens to replace. Who wants best free product? Chad, do you want for them or John, do you want for
I'll go for it.
Okay, best free product.
Hookers and blow.
I don't know where those are free, but hey, you know what, somebody made it work. And that's why they got a damn in.
They're free in the evidence locker at the county police station. I tell you what,
too.
Oh no, they're in the drunk tank usually.
Evidence locker. John, best game.
Best game. Ooh, I don't even know what new games are coming out, so I'm just going to make one up.
If you could play any game...
Any game
that you completely and totally make up on the spot right now, what would it be?
Alpha Centauri, The Fungusing.
I like it.
A World of Darkness style game set in the early stages of the Alpha Centauri colonization effort, during which Planet Mind and the worms and the xenofungus are screwing with everybody and terrifying everything. You may not even come into contact with another faction during the whole course of the game, but you have to deal with the fact that Ranger Rick just went outside and came back clawing out his own eyes, begging to be put to death, and then a mindworm larva blew up out of his head.
Can I play a guy with a brain staple?
You can be a nerve staple drone.
Awesome.
Yes. In fact, there are going to be nerve staplings. Everyone who just saw that go on had to be nerve stapled for their own good and for the sake of social stability.
Awesome.
In fact, I think that's in the Recon Rick technology blurb. Whatever the Morganite response protocol was to nerve staple everyone who saw that happen, just so they can't talk about it.
Next pitch. This one comes from Fred. We get a lot of Freds here, at least deviations of that name. This game takes place in an alternate history, feudal Chinese-Japanese setting. Feuding provincial warlords, symbolic but essentially powerless emperor, and stereotypical peasants are the key elements of the setting. While the present cultural and societal norms have been in place for hundreds of years and are deeply ingrained, the seeds of revolution have been planted and are about to bear fruit. Will societal and cultural norms shift? Will a new regime take power? Or will the revolution be stamped out before it has a chance to spread? I've left the details vague on purpose so the game could fit in any system. Central themes include divided loyalties, the price of power, and overcoming differences to secure alliances.
I like it.
So it's like a political game.
I can think of points in both Chinese and Japanese history that this fits pretty well. I think the first thing that came to mind was Japanese history just because...
Shogun 2?
Well, yeah, Shogun 2 mostly, especially with... Fall of the Samurai.
Yeah, that's exactly what I started envisioning. I started thinking like, okay.
Oh, really?
See, there's a general, and then there's an emperor, and then they're clashing, and maybe there's like the Eco-Iki, where there's a popular peasant movement that's also ascending.
See, I was thinking more past, much less modern to it. I was actually going Legend of the Five Rings, the role playing.
That's
game.
Also, I think it's set up so you could take that to L5R. Yeah.
L5R. I mean, I'm not a huge L5R fan. In that I don't know the story of it, but I don't think that there's much rebelling going on. I think it's established powers fighting other established powers. Who says you have to use L5R? We're using our rules, or our story, or his story, or Wadia's brother's story, whoever that guy is. Freddy.
It's just Fred. We didn't have to guess on this one.
Oh, okay. So Fred, you know, it's his story and his pitch. It's a good pitch. It tells you what you're doing and the feel of it and the setting and stuff. I would have a lot of questions, though, about it.
I think I would put this in the same category that I would the prior two ones of I like where it's headed, and I want just a little bit more. I'm not saying even want a lot more. I'm not saying like I want six paragraphs of detailed explanation, but it'd just be kind of like, tell me something about the politics. Tell me something about the technology level. Just give me something to kind of, okay, I kind of get the framework here. But now I just need something to get the wheels turning.
Right.
I think we can assume with all of kind these of that once interest is peaked and well before game one, the GMs are going to go into much more detail about exactly what is expected of the characters
and
the setting.
A pitch, too, is really about you do these pitches here and then they ask you questions.
I agree.
And then you mold the pitch to their questions.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll agree.
And you let them have input.
Yes.
So if we presume the intention here is once again just kind of to get your mind in a certain place and then kind of let the wheels turn from there, then I give that one a good. If that's the sum of the pitch, then my critique would be I like the setup, and I'm not saying, once again, there doesn't need to be much more. It could be one or two sentences, but just some statement of absolute fact that would kind of inspire me to say, aha, I've got an idea of what kind of character I'd want to play or what faction I would want to side with.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I can't say that the content of the pitch blew my socks off, but that's just me.
I should think for my next one, when it gets back around to me, I'm going to do one that actually goes to the reverse extreme, has quite a bit of detail, and we'll see how that plays out. But first, this just in. Best miniatures product of 2013, the Midgets in Borderlands 2. John?
Oh, they're small.
Midgets on the Borderlands 2? I wasn't even listening to you because I'm picking out my next pitch. That's all I heard.
What if there was a Borderlands 2 RPG on the Borderlands? The Borderlands on the board.
It'd be the midgets.
Yeah.
I miss my midget.
I miss my midget. You're so insulting to midgets.
They prefer the term little people.
John, best monster or adversary?
Best monster or adversary? Goblin zombie phycomid. Blood Moon Goblins.
What's a phycomid?
A phycomid is a malevolent, non-intelligent fungus spore creature that throws acid globs at things and starts doing con damage. And if it kills you, 1d4 rounds later, a fully formed phycomid blows up from inside your corpse and starts throwing acid spores. In this manner, they can propagate themselves very, very quickly.
That's awful.
With the fungus and the spores. I did the same thing with the xenofungus. Wow.
Why does any people let something like that exist?
Because they're an atrociously effective bioweapon.
Well,
the goblin zombie phycomid
Army of people who don't like them.
Yeah. Okay, so wipe them out.
Yeah.
Why are there dragons with treasures in the ground? Why haven't multinational corporations formed to hunt them down and seize them and sell shares of stock?
How many dragons do you see flying around right now?
Look, the voting is in. We're just giving the results.
That's
the debate is over.
That's right. Okay? Goblin zombie phycomid.
All right, I'm going to skip over one because that's going to be the real piece de resistance of this whole...
Is it best podcast?
It is. Oh, and I already know what it's going to be. It ain't going to be us.
Well, who is it? Come on.
Okay, fine. I'll go ahead and do best podcast, but we still have to do one more because Chad needs to do one. Best podcast, Keith and the Girl, the Lost X-Rated episodes.
What?
What?
No idea.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Well,
to
anyone who follows podcasts, that would be funny, I hope, or offensive. One of the two.
This being one third of the current hosts of this podcast.
Fine. All right, Chad, best production values.
I would say Chris Hussey's buttock.
Okay.
There has been a lot of labor and science into that book, and flaxseed pills, and omega-3s.
I mean, it's gastronomical, it's physiological, there's exercise, there's...
This car is automatic, ass-o-matic, gastromatic, and colomatic.
A lot of body fluids have been spilled making that butt. Let's just leave it at that. They may or may not be blood, sweat, and tears, but nonetheless. Okay, Chad.
Yes.
What's your next pitch? Then we'll get back to the Election Center 2013.
This pitch is one sentence long, but he has a lot of other stuff in that.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read the pitch itself, and then I'll read the email that kind of wraps
it.
The pitch is, and there's no name on this either, Muppets Pigs in Space Traveler Edition! !
Sold.
If this is going to be a short run game, you got me. If this is like an ongoing campaign, I don't think I could be funny that long. But if this is going to be like a one-shot, two-shot, three-shot beer and pretzels game, you got me.
Muppets, Pigs in Space, Traveler.
The question is, are you like the fully emotive talking Miss Piggy Muppet Pigs? Or are you like the pig that's in the middle of the wheel on Sesame Street that just goes like, wah.
You know what? I'm going to say you're the fully talking emotive.
Well, Pigs in Space has specific characters. You know, it had the guy with the slick back blonde hair.
But it's Traveler Edition, so to get the true feel of Traveler, you have to make your pig so he could potentially die in character creation.
Right.
You're at which point they become a mess.
They become bacon.
They become rations.
They become
the
bacon. Yes. I don't see there's no wrong way out of this.
Dan, your character died in character creation. What does your character do?
Friggin', let's LARP bacon.
I am delicious. That's what I do. I'm bacon. His or hers whole emails is, okay, so you asked for a good game pitch. I have one for a comedy game. Muppets, Pigs in Space, Traveler Edition.
See,
he has the exclamation point.
Well, you know what, in this case...
Well, it's not over yet.
All right. I'm sorry.
Every time I say it's one of my back burner for a con game, I get asked if there might be an option to play test, so I know I'm on to something good. Muppets, Pigs in Space, Traveler Edition.
You know what, in this case, I gotta say the system helps sell it.
Oh, yes.
Because of the fact that the contrast for a comedy game between Muppets, Pigs in Space, and a game that's fairly gritty and brutal like Traveler, that works on every level.
I think it's a great pitch for like an in-betweener one-shot con game. Yeah. We're all sitting around, it's just like, what do you guys want to do tonight? We can't play our normal game for whatever reason. Who's got some ideas? And I say, Muppets, Pigs in Space, Traveler Edition.
John,
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the enthusiasm of the delivery, too.
Ageist question here. Being the youngest person on the podcast, How familiar?
I'm not the youngest person on the podcast. Oh, I'm the youngest person
right
on mics tonight.
That's what I meant. I'm the youngest person on this episode. How familiar are you with Pigs in Space? When I say Pigs in Space...
Not even slightly.
Okay, so that might be one barrier depending on the group is are they familiar enough with the classic Muppets, the 1970s and I guess what, early 80s Muppets?
What do you think of? I mean, obviously we're saying Muppets and stuff, but what's the first thing you think of when you hear Pigs in Space? Like if somebody pitched this game to you, you'd be like...
If they said it without the Muppets... Yeah. Prequel, I would be like, so this is like Babe, Pig in the City, or like Gordy or something? Because I'm on board with that. Zefram Cochrane owns Babe and raised him from a little piglet. So if he wants to go to like Warp 002...
Oh my god, Zefram Cochrane did!
Yeah, dude. That's what I think of when I think of Pigs in Space.
That's what he did.
So as soon as they break the warp barrier, that'll do Pig.
The Vulcan ambassador comes out, it's like, that'll
totally
do Pig.
This totally changes my whole worldview. I'm absolutely...
You know what?
For those of you listening to the audio version of this podcast, Chad is like
pale
and jaw open, literally.
I know.
Like Moses, we will need a veil over his face for the rest of the episode.
I can't believe that. I can't believe I never put that together.
Unintentional revelations with Fear the Boot, starring John and Chad.
Warp 1.1 will do, Pig. Warp 1.1 will do.
Why has it not been mashed up yet?
I just mentioned it in passing as if it was universally acknowledged.
I need a YouTube video now of that mashup. Not tomorrow. Not a month from now.
Look.
Now.
I can't.
That's the game I want to play. I want to play Babe in Space now.
I don't know why somebody didn't put their name on it because they apparently just sold us gold. But you know what happened here is, look, it's a firm idea. It's vague, but there's enough there that I get what they're going for, knowing what Pigs in Space is.
Mm-hmm.
And then John not knowing what it is just made it better.
Like water around the stones and logs in the rivers, I have created my own cohesive canon. This is the essence of GMing. You take crap you have no awareness of, much less control over.
Yes.
And in the end, you wrap it up like, oh, yeah, so I established that plot line in the sales pitch and halfway through session two.
Yes. And I totally get this sort of Muppets Pigs in Space.
Right.
All new characters in the grim, dark, comedic reality of Traveler with a human farmer standing in back going, that'll do, Commander. That'll do. Great game.
Ironically,
awesome game.
Zefram Cochrane is going to be farmed by the aliens and the pigs have to stand up and save him by demonstrating to the harvester race that he has useful novelty skills like sheep herding.
Yes, and drinking and swearing and being able to break the warp barrier and first contact.
Best RPG related product.
Muppets Pigs in Space Traveler. Zefram Cochrane edition. On the Borderlands. Punk. I'm just calling you a punk.
Okay. Then I will take best rules. Rifts 2.0.
Oh, God.
John, I know you can't say Balloon Goblins. Best setting.
Best setting. Farmer Hoggets, extraterrestrial satellite radio outpost in orbit on the Borderlands.
Punk?
Punk.
Again, not a punk genre. We're calling you a punk.
That'll do, John. That'll do. Okay, John, you want to go ahead and give us a pitch?
Yes. It's been 3 months since your distant space station has heard back from Earth and supplies are beginning to run low. Keith Feen.
I love it.
I love it too.
It's awesome. It's my co-host.
I want
it's
more
my
information.
From Kick to the Dice Bag.
That is the Keith?
That is
okay.
The Keith.
Well,
so
well,
I love
Keith.
It.
I want to know why we don't have supply recycling on board. I think if this is a sufficiently advanced space station, we're all eating like poop burgers and showering in our pee and stuff like they do on the ISS. And I want to know what exactly I need, but this leads once again to an Alpha Centauri type situation where you have been set off to journey as a researcher or the vanguard of the colonies or whatever, and the comm just goes dark coming from home, and this could mean your antenna is busted. This could mean the world has been consumed in nuclear hellfire. You have no idea, but either way, you're on your own, and it's time to get cracking.
I really like that trope, if it even is a trope, of you are in space and you're alone.
Oh, it's definitely
but you're not normally alone. Something has happened to make you and the people you're with. You're in space and you're cut off. Space is a safe thing. We have the technology. We can travel. We're all interconnected, and it's relatively safe. Something happens.
Yeah.
It's no longer safe.
Simply being marooned is the most catastrophic, or unimaginable, simply being a horrible, maroon. Or simply being a maroon. Punk.
On the borderlands.
But yeah, I mean, you
pig.
All you got to do is knock out the antenna or the burglar recycler and or burglar, not burglar. You could have a burglar. A burglar would be catastrophic because he cuts off your supply of poop burgers and then you die of starvation. But yes, I agree, Chad.
Captain, we're all out of undigestible corn shells. But, you know,
sir, it's green.
Here's my thing on that.
On the poop burglar?
Yeah, sci-fi is such a broad genre. Sci-fi encompasses everything from
things that happen in the future. The future being defined as 1 minute.
Or things that happened in the present or the past.
Yeah.
As redefined, long as there's a different level of technology. Yeah,
precisely. Yeah. And sometimes not even that. I mean, sometimes the line between science fiction and speculative fiction is fuzzy at best, and I'm sure is wanked about all over the place, but not this podcast. But
yeah, right.
Well, I'm not going to start wanking on it. If you look at science fiction as a whole, I mean, it includes things like War of the Worlds, 2001, Star Trek, Star Wars. Yeah, I mean, all kinds of different
Star Wars, Yankee, science, King Arthur's court.
All kinds of, you know, really divergent sorts of feels and whatever. This is kind of the thing I keep coming back to, I guess, with a lot of these. Is I'd want to know more, but I think in this case, instead of I'd want a sentence or two more, I think I'd actually probably want a paragraph more. Mm-hmm. Give me a setup of how we got here.
Yeah.
You know, we were on what kind of a ship doing what? You know, what point in history? And, you know, I'm not saying you
You're not even on a ship. You're on a station.
So station.
A ship is easy.
Okay,
a ship, you turn around and go home.
Right, well, no, maybe.
You presumably cannot do this.
Okay, but the point is on a station. But I would want to know something. Is this station in orbit of something? Is it deep space? And I realize that probably one of Keith's intentions, especially as short as he made it, was that he's trying to go for the what do you see in this sort of game pitch and draw out what the players see. And I'm totally on board with that. But as a player, if I was going to be sold on this campaign, I'm not saying I'd want him to spell out every detail, but I would want him to give me some kind of a framework. And aliens? In this case,
not aliens.
Yeah. Are there aliens? No aliens.
I'm not saying it's aliens.
Is this a deep space? Is this a deep space station? Yeah. How did we get
what
here?
What are we playing? What's the system?
Yeah.
Just I think that
something
it's,
here.
I think that it's a good concept because I find that kind of concept fun, but it's not the great. Sorry, Keith. It's not the greatest pitch. Simply because it doesn't define enough. You have to ask too many questions. I think a good pitch is one where a handful of questions get asked that you can use to build off of. This one, the players would have to ask so many questions, they end up not building the game, but they build your pitch for you. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
I actually absolutely agree with what you just said, which is you want to leave enough open questions to hook somebody to feel out what's interesting them without making them build the sum of the pitch. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to throw this one on the trash heap, but what I would say is I would definitely want more. And unlike the previous pitches where I've said I wanted more, where I meant like one sentence, two sentences, in this case, I think I'd probably want a paragraph more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Points for brevity, though.
Yeah. And where previously I have sort of applied a, well, Dan, this is just the first kick admonishment, I will agree with you wholeheartedly here and say, even as the two-breath elevator pitch, there should be a little bit more. That said, I'm going to say it's a good pitch because I want to play in the game. And Keith, I hope you run it at Fear the Con 6.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it sounds like a great setup for a game. Yeah. Even if, as a campaign pitch, it would leave me with, I think, more questions than actionable answers.
And I don't think we sufficiently defined whether you are pitching a campaign or a single game with these. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and consider which one it works the best on. I mean, I don't know, maybe we did, but I don't remember us doing it.
Best supplement, magnesium citrate.
We need Chris on here for that.
There's weed pills.
His boner teen or whatever it is he's on now.
God. I swear, I don't think he eats any actual food. I think he just eats yogurt and supplements.
Yogurt with like pills mixed up in it.
Yes, yes. And
hey, when 900 years old you are, look as good you will not.
I mean, and you know what? I can't really criticize the guy. I'm kind of a fat ass. And he's got buns of steel. I mean, he breaks chairs when he sits down on them just by clenching. So,
all right,
the man's in good shape.
He is.
Have you touched his arm?
I've hugged him and I've lifted him off the ground before. Yeah. He's a block of wood, and he's also very solidly built.
John, best website.
Best website.
Chris's yogurt farm.com.
On this day of politics as usual.
Oh, I'm no.
Say the best website.
No.
LemonParty.org.
Beep that out.
LemonParty.org. If you're tired of politics as usual.
No. Do not go there.
Chad, best writing.
If you are at work, don't go there.
If you are a human being with eyes and can see with those eyes, do not go there.
Chad, best writing.
Oh, best writing. Oh, I'll have to kiss the Dan's ass here for a second. The XCOM narrative that you're writing.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
I'm really enjoying that. I look forward to the updates.
I should put that up for an any, even though it has you nothing should. To do with role-playing games. Should.
Well, it does now. Why not?
It's a role-playing game of sorts. I'm having the most deep human psychodrama
role-playing on it.
I've ever had an RPG in that post. I'm dealing with alcoholism and inheriting Pat and Beth's children when they die. These are deeper subjects than I've ever tackled as a
while
wizard.
While facing your own
yes.
potential death.
While doing this all from the intensive care unit because my chest got blown open by a plasma blast.
I'm doing pretty good.
You actually are.
Yeah.
I don't think you've taken anything more than a minor wound here
and
there.
Yeah, just a marmoscrape.
You've been beat up, but yeah, you've not had any of the real...
That's why my character keeps like, put me on the ship.
I know.
And now I'm like, and my Stephen Hawking screen says, put Chad on the ship.
I am retiring.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to read another one here before we get to the last round of the Ennies. This one, unlike the previous one, I think actually gives quite a bit more detail. Mm-hmm. Now, let's see if that detail works out. Let's see how this one plays out. This one was sent in by Greg.
I have a Greg.
There's several Gregs in here. But this Greg in particular said, it's a game that will take place at multiple points in history. And at each point, the party will have the opportunity to interact with some important event and possibly change the course of history.
It's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the role-playing game. In.
Perhaps it builds up to a finale in the present day or near future. The rule system should be something simple like Savage Worlds or D6, since the PCs will have to make 5 to 6 characters throughout the course of the game, or perhaps the system could change depending on the particulars of that section of the game. Well, that's an interesting level of flexibility.
Now you're talking.
We open at some undefined point in prehistory in a land that the PCs have no name for. In my head, I would be using a Minoan thing, but any time place that most normal people wouldn't recognize would work. You could hand out pictures of several artifacts, pottery, whatever, but don't actually tell the PCs when or where they are. The game opens up, and their PCs have just arrived at their patron's palace town with a load of trade goods. Their intention is to trade their goods for food for the winter, and if they do not do this, their village could very easily starve. However, when they arrive at the palace, there is no one to be found anywhere. In fact, it appears as if everyone has disappeared into thin air. The good news is that they will likely be able to get their food for free now. The bad news is that they'll have to go into the palace to get it. This doesn't seem too horrible until they get close to the palace and hear strange, discordant piping music coming from inside. He goes on to kind of work through the first part of the game and says, then tell the PCs that whatever's happening inside the palace has the potential to change the course of human history, and then mention that they are the only humans around who can influence the situation inside, and then let them know that this is only the first session. Whatever comes after depends on what they do inside the palace. Going forward, the game would focus on what could be called defining moments in history. Each moment would take 2 to 5 sessions, and the PCs will each time be a group of people that have the power to influence the situation in some way. Think a little bit like Eternal Darkness, if you are familiar with that game, but with much more potential story-changing power put in the hands of the PCs. Hmm. And he's got some more that goes on from there. He kind of pitches out why he thinks this is a good pitch, but I think explaining why it's a good pitch is kind of overselling it. So let me just stop there. More or less, at least based on real history, so I have a sense of the genre, we're going to be playing characters at intervals throughout history who will be present for some event. You know, they might be there at the shot heard round the world and they've got the rifle and they can choose to pull the trigger or not. You know, for example, I don't know what he has planned, you know, but whatever it is, you're at an event and you can choose to go left or right. And based on what you do, human history changes. And when you play the next generation, and I say generation here, if he's talking from prehistory to the modern day, we're probably skipping like 1,000 years a pop. But when you play that next group, you have to deal with what has become of history since the prior group. I gotta say, this one I like for several reasons. One, if any part of the game doesn't sit well with me, All I got to do is sit for a couple sessions, deal with it, and then we're going to be playing a completely different group. The idea of possibly switching systems outright to fit the feel of the time, that's kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, I like that.
He certainly sold me on what we're doing. Even though we don't know the details, we know that we're changing history. So I have a sense that what I'm doing is significant. And there's certainly an opportunity there for him to really kind of take what we do and stretch it out in ways we didn't expect from one rotation, I guess I'll call it, to the next. So I got to say, as a pitch, this one's a winner to me. I don't know that I have anything critical to say about it.
I would certainly
have some things to say based on how I think it ought to be run, but that's a different episode completely. That has nothing to do with the pitch.
Right.
On this pitch, I don't know that I have any critique to give.
I like it. It's original. I'd have some meta questions about, do we have a character sheet? How does the character sheet change with the system? Do we have to roll up multiple characters? Is there a lot of paperwork on the front end that, you know, so you don't have to do it later? Or is there any paperwork at all? Is this all like sort of diceless or real low rules systems?
He did say in here that you'd have to create characters between these epochs of history. And certainly based on what you did in the prior one, I mean, it could radically change even the potential of a character to exist. You know, if you say in one you're going to play a Teutonic Knight, and yet in the previous game you wiped out the population of Greater Germania, then that's kind of impossible. But he did say nonetheless that he would want to stick with a simpler system so these characters could be pumped out pretty quickly. So that's certainly a fair concern. Yeah. Are we going to spend two or three games playing and then a game of paperwork, and then two or three games playing and then a game of paperwork? And would that become too tedious, which I think could be eliminated by picking the right system, especially a very rules light system?
Yeah, I think you want rules light throughout. You don't want to spend a whole session generating characters every time you hop through the time portal.
Product of the year. Who wants that one?
On the Borderlands.
On the Borderlands.
Yeah. I mean, it's so modular and transportable, and it can be added to anything. It is.
Forget D20, forget Fate.
Savage Borderlands.
Well, you know what? Just like you, have Savage and D20 and whatever for systems, we need it for settings.
That's right.
This settings, is a concepts, setting you can plug anything. Into any any rule set you like. On the Borderlands.
On the Borderlands.
It occurred on the Borderlands.
Right. Cooking Mama on the Borderlands.
Punk.
Punk is what you call the person you're talking to because they don't get it. It's not the punk setting at all. That's totally different.
John, fan's favorite publisher. You know what? I'm going
to
take this one.
This is hard to make fun of.
I'm going
to
take this one.
Go ahead and take it.
Kinko's.
Kinko's, yes.
True.
All right, John, I will give you the Judge's Spotlight Award.
Brothers Laser Pointer.
the Judge's Spotlight Award, John Roberts.
John Roberts. Fair enough.
There you go.
He's the most spotlighted judge.
That's where we're going to end this one. You guys now have had your full election coverage for 2013, so you know exactly how things are going to play out. No need to even enter the endings or go show up for them this year. We've already told you how they turn out.
That's right.
Somebody needs to catalog all the winners on our website. By somebody, I mean a fan and not me.
I can put them in the show notes, I guess, but maybe I will. I don't know. But the point being, either way, going back to these game submissions, I want to thank everyone that entered because I know that you guys obviously...
There was a bunch that we didn't read that we just ran out of time.
There was a stack of them we didn't read. And it's really cool that you guys, one, took the time to write these, and two, had the guts to put yourself out there, because I don't think there's anything we read here that we just... trash heap. I
mean, not at all.
Everything.
There's nothing that anyone even submitted that we didn't read that was
awful. To be honest with you, I would play all these games. I would give every single one of these pitches a shot.
Yeah. The critiques that I had were really just, there are things I would change about the pitch, but there was nothing in there where it was like, this is a terrible pitch. It's a terrible idea. There's no way I'd come close to this. So you guys really did do a great job. And I hope that the critiques we provided are useful insight, at least into how we think, recognizing your gaming group may be different, and is not some kind of an absolute statement of like or dislike or anything like that, or in any way discouraging. Because like I said, I think it's great you guys put yourself out there. And there was some really cool stuff in here. And I'll agree with what was just said, that there was no pitch we read through tonight that I was just like, no, there's no way this completely fails to sell me. I'm not even vaguely interested. I'm coming up with excuses on why I can't make it for the next 6 months. You know, that's there was nothing like that in there. So you guys did an excellent job. And on top of that, we finally fulfilled our promise to do this. So
yes,
it's like a lot of things. We're slow, but we get there eventually. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you are having a good week and wonderful games as always. I don't know what we're talking about next time yet. We've got some topic ideas piled up. We need to just figure out which one we're going to tackle. There's also an interview or two I'd like to get in. But either way, we'll be back with you within a week. So you guys have a wonderful day, and we will catch you next time. See ya. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.